Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
We'll start now, gents, and thank you very much for joining me, gents. Hurling has probably never been spoken about as much as it has over the last few weeks, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the lay of the land and how you feel it is. Is it in a good place? Could it be in a better place? We'll talk about cynicism, obviously, in a while, and the motion that's coming up. But Eddie, we'll start with you. Your own thoughts.
Yeah, I suppose there's obviously a huge factor at play that has influenced the hurling landscape for the last 12 months. And, you know, I think that there may be developments in the next couple of weeks, but it has definitely changed everything. It has probably forced us to think a little bit more about the game and these changes that, you know, people are talking about always of, you know, shortened the championship, a condensed year, all those issues. You're saying, look, for me anyway, in my opinion, I think inter-county players are doing far too much training. So you're saying, look, this is the opportunity maybe to break up the calendar a little bit and go at that side of it. I think the big talking point that came out of the championship last year, and we were all delighted to get some kind of a championship in fairness, and it was exciting. But I think what it presented us with is that there's no reason why a championship can't be played every fortnight. You know, we're not having these extended breaks, which is really a positive out of it. But yeah, look, I think the issue of players being dragged down has definitely come to the fore. It is now at a stage where I think it was simmering there for the last little while. And don't get me wrong, we all love a good physical combative type game where there's a good edge to it. But I think we're definitely seeing that element now where if there's a sniff of a goal chance and a team are coming down the straight, you know, you take even the end of the club football I learned last year, Cora Finn.
Yeah.
You know, it resulted in, you know, the guys, I can't think of their name from Down, getting the ball brought all the way down for a kickable 45 for a free that got moved up twice for, you know, what is nothing more than a rugby tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Shane, your own thoughts. I'll ask about structure in a while, but the game itself, are you happy with where it is at the moment?
I think, like Eddie was saying there, I think the best thing to come out of COVID for the GAA is definitely the split season. I think it's a no-brainer. Suits everybody. Like, even if you take it now, like, you know, I'd say the club lads, while, you know, they're bursting for road, you still look out the window there and it's spilling rain and it's windy, like, some nights, and you're like, I'm glad I'm not training with the club tonight. And, you know, whenever I do get back trained in, maybe it might be April or May for club lads, will be absolutely busting for road. You'll have clubs won't have to rent out pitches with floodlights or won't have to rent out an AstroTurf. So, you know, the clubs are saving money. And the other thing is, you're going to, everybody will really want to play hurling or football or camogie at that stage. So I think that's a great thing, John, anyway, is the split season. I think it has to just speed away. Like, it probably did take a pandemic for us to see that it can work, like, because... It was horses for horses and it was forced upon us. But look, I think that's brilliant. How do I think the game is? I think from a hurling point of view, I think everybody will always try and match whoever is the best at the time. So I suppose if you take it like, say, Eddie's team, everybody wanted to be like Kilkenny. But what, and the thing was just, you know, get the ball down there, you know, let people win their own ball, you know, don't maybe overcomplicate the thing, you know. But then people had to realise, right, Kilkenny are the great word, that team is the greatest hurling team ever. So that didn't work for everybody. So people had to adapt. And they did adapt. And, you know, people eventually started getting up to that level. So at the moment, John, that team at the moment for me is Limerick. So everybody will say, right, how are we going to beat Limerick? Right, how are we going to beat Limerick? Well, from looking at it from the outside view, I'd say the first thing is, which I think is kind of sad for players like maybe me, or I can only speak for myself, Eddie was bigger than me in hurling, but unless I'd say you can bench press 80, 90, 100 kgs now, I'd say forget about playing inter-county hurling. And I think that's kind of one of the sad things, because you look at the Limerick boys, if you put the Munster rugby jersey or whatever rugby jersey on them, they wouldn't look out of place. Mm. And like, these lads are top athletes, but I just think that if you get lost in the whole, right, let's all try and be as big as Limerick team, like, are you going to get the best hurlers hurling? Yeah. You say, let's take Tipperary there now at the moment. They brought back in a guy there, Alan Tynan. He's from Ross Gray. And he would have went to school in Cistercians. He would have got a contract with Leinster Rugby on the academy there. So he's a guy I know, like Tip, I'm maybe looking to, like, you know, to maybe bring that physicality in. And I'm sure we might see other guys as well, around the country. But what I'm trying to say, John, is, like, I hope everyone doesn't go down the route of we have to be super, super strong to be a really good hurling team.
I guess.
And
you.
I think a lot of teams will. The other thing for Limerick is, like, Kinnock is serious in regards that, you know, their style of play might change a small bit next year to try and get a leg up. They'll also probably bring in one or two guys into their starting 15. Yeah. Like, you take Barry Nash this year, established himself, Seamus Flanagan. I go back to the lads as well, the team Eddie was on. There was always one or two guys who didn't make the starting 15. Mm-hmm. You know, you had your 10 or 11 guys who made it every year, but I think that's what Limerick do. Flanagan came on and established himself this year. I'm sure Pat Ryan is looking at himself going, hey, I don't want to be a sub anymore here. You know, he's on the panel now 5, 6, 7 years. So, I suppose, try to answer your question. I think hurling is a good place. I just hope teams don't go down the route of let's all be massive.
Yeah.
And let's try and hurl in after it. So I just hope that I hope that hurling will come to the forefront.
I get you, Shane. Are you worried about the lack of goals? I did a study there a couple of weeks ago on the lack of goals. Now, obviously, it's not completely tied in with cynicism. But when the likes of yourselves and the likes of Shane's Tip were winning All-Irelands, there was an average, they were averaging 2 goals a game. Now we're seeing teams winning All-Irelands, going back to Galway, obviously, back in 17, averaging less than a goal a game. Limerick obviously didn't need goals last season. Is that something that concerns you from hurling as an entertainment, as a spectacle?
Yeah, I suppose primarily that's what we all want, whether it is pundits, journalists, supporters, whatever it is, you want to go up and be entertained. And clearly on top of that, then you obviously want your own team to win. But I think what you're probably seeing is you're seeing a shift. Possibly, you know, even you look at Limerick this year, and again, I'm a big fan. I admire what they've done and what they're doing. But there definitely is a distinct shift towards getting goals. And I think it's probably based on or getting points. If the goal opportunities arise, that's no problem. They seem to have guys circling around that they seem to have. Their game is built on getting the shots off, getting quality shots off and taking their points. If the goal opportunities come, it's a bonus. And that's the way they seem to set up. If you look at even, it's probably based on how an opposition team is setting up. Because I thought in the Leinster final there of, geez, I think it was 17, when Wexford had Sean Murphy sitting on the edge of the square. Galway just kind of almost made a triangle to the edge of the D and backwards, and they stayed out of that zone. They put the ball down high, and their bigger men, physically stronger, broke the ball and they took all their points. So it's probably more, maybe there's a shift tactically from teams that they're saying, look, we may not get through here. And then look, obviously we'll get to the cynical side of it, whereby you're going to have lads saying, listen, just whip them early, don't let the goal chances develop. But yeah, it's probably the way maybe hurling is going, because, you know, like Shane said there, teams will look at the top team and say, right, let's pick that a little bit. Let's see, can we counteract that? And I just felt even this year, you know, I think Galway were probably the closest from maybe taking Limerick that day. Look, it'd be a shame, because you love to see that happen. You love to see lads putting pressure high up the field, whereas, you know, it's just maybe the game is evolving that way and we have to embrace that somewhat. But I still think, you know, an inside forward line, I think primarily you're trying to feed them to get in and get goals, and that'd be a shame if we lose that. I think early parts of the championship this year, we saw a nice few goals, and then they seemed to dry up as the championship went along. Obviously, the cut and trust of it was, thou shalt not pass, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And Eddie, you know, Shane referenced it there, when everybody wanted to be like Kilkenny, like it was on the edge, but you were entertainers as well. Are people conflating things here at the moment? Like, we're looking at the cynicism and how big Limerick are. Obviously, you know, it's very easy and far too easy to conflate the two to the 2 points. Do you see a little bit of envy about Limerick? And do you think, yeah, obviously there was 2 incidents in the All-Ireland final, one which obviously towards the end really didn't matter, but Would you have a concern, just like Kilkenny were seeing, the, you know, and there was envy about Kilkenny in those times, that there is a bit of envy about this Limerick team, and maybe they're being painted as something that they're not?
Yeah, no, look, I think it's clear to point out here, look, it's definitely not. You know, sometimes we tend to do that sometimes, the more than when a team comes along and maybe dominate, or they really power to a championship. There's obviously a level of admiration in that. And as like I said, I'm a huge admirer of what Limerick have done, because they have come from 10 or 12 years of graft of putting a system together in the background that has ultimately got them here. But it happens in every sport. The team that is up there are to be shot at. And sometimes then, you know, the nature of us and Irish people, yeah, we love to see the underdog coming through. Then we suddenly love to take them down a notch. And I think that would be very unfair in Limerick, because I like the way they play. No more than anyone else, then we have to look at individual incidents of cynicism on their merits on their own, regardless of who's wearing the jerseys. And we have to be bigger than that. But overall, look, I like the way they play. I think you're going to see teams trying to set up maybe like them. The big question is now, do you stick with, do you mirror what they're doing and turn it into an arm wrestle? Like the example I use is the way Dublin approached them in the league final there last year.
Yeah.
You know, they went down to Nolan Park and they literally kind of mirrored Limerick and put a lot of bodies back, and it turned it into a real, you know, I for one was kind of looking at that match day and I was pulling out my hair going, this is a terrible spectacle. Yeah. But it was a real arm wrestle and a grind, and the match opened up at the end. So in terms of that, look, I think it will evolve a little bit. I don't think it's that we should be losing our life over.
Yeah.
I think, you know, to be the physical athletes that Limerick are, I think there's a lot of teams not unlike them. There's a lot of teams maybe just a small bit behind. What they probably have is their movement and their ability to hurl as well. I think you can have, you obviously need the physical component and the athleticism in your game now, as Shane said earlier on, quite rightly. But I think their skill level is absolutely top quality. Their ability to score points is top quality. So in relation to that, their hurling smarts and their hurling intelligence and their hurling technical ability is top quality. And there's probably not as many teams, there's probably a lot of teams, I think maybe the likes of Tip are close to them in that regard in Galway. But yeah, I think that's probably the key to it is here. You can be as big as you want, but if you're not able to hurl, and Limerick are able to hurl, so if we're going to take on just the Limerick as the All-Ireland champions right now, then you have to be able to do everything.
Absolutely. And as you said, Shane, Alan Tynan coming in there, and obviously we have seen footballers going back to Stephen O'Brien coming into the Tip group over the last while, and maybe that was in their thinking, and just the need for more physical players. But in terms of this cynical emotion, Shane, obviously it's been amended since last Friday, in terms of restricting it to the inside the 20 metre and the semicircle. How do you feel about it? Because it wasn't 12 months ago that the black card was shot down big time at Congress, and now 12 months later, you know, there seems to be a huge amount of support with the likes of Ned Quinn and John Coskin supporting this idea of bringing in a sin bin for hurling.
Yeah, and I suppose it does kind of depend on what happened maybe the previous year, or if there's four or five massive incidents of it. There probably was a good few incidents, obviously, in the bigger games, John, this year, and I suppose the fact that there was nothing else going on in the world, really, it probably was paid more attention to. There probably was more people watching games, and, you know, it's bringing these things up, and, you know, when they do start cropping up, and when you do start seeing these things trending and stuff, there obviously is something happening in games. So, like, as much as we love hurling, there is that cynicism. There's no point in saying anything else, like, but just looking at the definition of it there, like I just said, if a player is pulled down, tripped with the hand, arm, leg, foot, or hurley, or careless use in a hurley. Like, I suppose the one that kind of sticks out for me, while it wasn't maybe in a semi-final or final, but was Danny Sutcliffe's one when he tripped up. I think it was one of the Leash boys, actually. And when I was looking at that, I was like, you know, like, should he get the sin bin for that? I would say, yeah, he should. You know, I think for fouls like that. I suppose where it's going to meet barriers, and even Willie Barrett there was talking about during the week, is, you know, how the refs are going to deal with it. And what I think could be difficult for them is, like, what competitive environment are they going to get to actually trial this? Like, let's say the league doesn't go ahead because you don't have time. And, like, our team's going to be allowed to play inter-county challenge games with movement. So, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to bring in an inter-county ref and maybe ref your internal game, your A versus B game, try and get used to it in that regard, for defenders especially, because you know, if you foul someone inside the 21 or inside the D, I think it's going to be a penalty, John. And so, and then you're going to get a sin bin. So there's a lot going on.
There's the layer on it as well, Shane. Just my understanding of my reading of it is that they're saying is that clear and obvious goal scoring opportunity. Is that included in the proposal?
Goal scoring opportunity.
I think that's adding a layer of interpretation and additional detail that you're looking for. I think it has to be kind of clean, like, because you're saying, well, you know, teams will adjust to that quickly enough. You know, I would say in 2010, I think Tip put a huge emphasis on protecting the D, and that was as in getting bodies there and making sure lads didn't get through. You know, so that type of quote, you say, grand. But if you're turning around and saying that, you know, I think pulling, just literally just grabbing someone. I think we saw an example with Shamey Callan this year against Galway in the All-Ireland final. You know, it doesn't necessarily, I think when you look at it from the point of view, if a forward breaks off the 45 heading for goal, well, is it fair to say that within 2 or 3 seconds, they're on the 21 now heading in towards goal, regardless of the bodies that are there, you know, to put in tackles and a kind of a circle and an additional circle around the area. Yeah. I just think that now means that what does the cynicism do? It just moves outside the circle. You know, I think we're either going to say we either want rid of cynical tackles, and I'm talking about, you know, I'm not talking about an honest, you know, a mistimed tackle. I'm talking about somebody just jumping on someone's back and ripping them to the ground, or wrestling someone to the ground saying, you're going no further and I'm happy to concede a point here. I think if it's inside the 45 or something like that, you know, maybe it's a bit easier to define or to referee, say, look, we give a yellow card. If it's inside the 45, it's a penalty. And I said, I think with an action that you're trying to get rid of something in a game, you have to deter it. There's no point in putting in a Mickey Mouse measure that only means that we bend the rules. We're Irish people at the end of the day. We love to find the grey of it, and we'll adjust our coaching. I just think if you're going to bring in a rule that's going to deal with the cynical play, and again, it's not something that's you know, it's an epidemic, it's just becoming a little bit more prevalent. And I think either you come in very firm to wipe it out and nail it, or you don't go near it at all. Because I think if you bring in a half measure, it just means we adjust, and then after 2 years, we'll cut it.
Yeah, what I wouldn't mind seeing, maybe going on what Eddie said there, if it's inside the 45 is danger now with everyone able to cover the ground. If it was inside the 45, maybe could we have a penalty against 3 players? And if it was inside the 21, have your 1v1 penalty? Or, you know, maybe, again, what happens there is, I don't know, you know. But the one thing for me is the careless use of the hurley thing. Like, just say you have a lad who's running back and you have a type of player who likes to bounce, do the bounce solo. And a lad comes just to kind of flick it away. He misses it fractionally.
Yeah.
Is that a cynical foul? Does he get sin bin for 10 minutes? Is there a penalty for it? When he was, you know, it's different for a lad who's coming behind you and he, you know, he goes for the funny bone, or he's going for the elbow. He knows what he's doing there.
I think, Shane, I think you're right with that. I think it's to make it very clear. I think just go with a straight penalty. It just means that everyone is clear then. So a defender goes, well, I'm going to roll the dice here. They know the consequences. They know the outcome here. They know, say, and I think maybe a yellow card, I mean, that's there. It covers rough play. So maybe you're saying, rather than, and again, I would have initially felt, I suppose that's the forward coming out of me, so I'm going to be a little bit biased, saying, oh God, no, sin bin, punished him hard for deliberate cynical play. We want to encourage good defending. And I think of, you remember Paddy's lockdown on one of the Coonies there in the All-Ireland semi-final in 2016, you know, whereas you say, if that's now, is he going to just dive in and wrestle him to the ground, whereas he got a great hook? That's the type of defending that we want to see. You know, you think JD and Shamey a few years ago, you say, you want to see defenders being as honest as could be. And look, there's a rough and tumble, but it's hard to strike a balance here with this. You know, I think the more layers you put in, it's more hard for referees to interpret.
I get you. Shane, like, and Eddie, obviously you would know, but your experience with the minors, it's not coached, Shane. This is the thing that, you know, it's not that it's innate in the player, but, you know, it's spontaneous almost at times.
There's no team giving away 15 or 20 minutes in a training session to, right, lads, this is how we're going to tackle, this is how you want to pull a lad down, you know what I mean? So there's no team doing that. But you can't I mean, you have to let players play with freedom too. I mean, I can only speak from dealing with the minors there the last couple of years. I mean, when it came to match day, okay, they are younger and they did need a little more guidance. But if it comes to an inter-county senior guy, you really have to tell him everything to do on match day. But then he probably shouldn't be playing in the first place. You get them so far and then you let them go in and do the exam on their own. And, you know, you get a chance to talk to them maybe at the water break or halftime and stuff like that. But, I mean, if you're instructing a guy or telling a guy before a game, when he gets here, you have to pull him down. You know, it's not there. Like, I mean, you go back to the physicality lads have. Like, I mean, lads are able to tackle now. Lads are able to tackle properly. Their arms out strong. They're able to hold up a guy. You know, and if they turn him around, I mean, that's nearly a victory for a defender or whatever. To get a guy to turn around and go back toward his own goal, that's a small victory for them. Like, so, no, there absolutely isn't. Like, I don't think there's any team anywhere is saying, right, there's a group of you going over there now, lads, for a mini game, and there's a group of you going to come over here and I'm going to show you how it's clinical foul. No, that's not going on, John. And if it is, I think it's ridiculous and it's a waste of time, like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, just a couple more subjects, lads, before we finish up. The championship, like, obviously we're expected next year in 2022 to, you know, God willing, to return to the round robin series in Munster and Leinster. Is that something that you would like to see, or did you, was your mind turned, or was your head turned by what we saw at the end of last year? Starting with Shane.
I loved round robin definitely in Munster hurling anyway. I think in Leinster as well, to be fair. Like, I mean, you have some super, super games even 2 years ago there. You know, you had a few draws and everything. I remember I was down covering Limerick and Cork one night on a Saturday night below Cork. I think the match ended up a draw. It did end up a draw the same night. Yeah. It was just unbelievable, the atmosphere at the game, Saturday night hurling. It was just brilliant. The lights start to come on near the end of the game. And I just thought that was brilliant. I'm a fan of the round robin. I think what it does is, you know, the players are getting more games, so there's less training. And I think that's what players want now: less training, more games. And I think we've got next year, John, when we can all go to the matches again, because, like, realistically, it probably won't happen this year that everyone can get to them. But please God, next year that everyone can go. I like the round robin. I think there's super excitement even in Leinster. Like the year before last, when you know Kilkenny playing Wexford down Wexford Park, and the ball hits the post, and while the same match is going on above in Parnell Park, I think with Dublin and Galway, I just think that was a super excitement, and so I'm a big fan of round robin. I hope it does come back first in anyway.
Like, Eddie, having been involved in it, like we're seeing in Munster, we're not seeing a lot of Munster champions going on to win All-Ireland titles. Obviously it happened with Limerick last year, but prior to that, I think Tipperary are the only team going back to that great Cork team you would have played in the mid-2000s. Is there too much emphasis being put on the provincial championships at the moment?
Yeah, I don't know. Like Shane said there, I think the round-robin system works really, really well. I definitely think I would be a huge fan of, you know, I think players are, number one, they're physically conditioned nowadays to go weekend on weekend. And if there's little breaks built in there somewhere, that's ideal because it gives them a chance to freshen up. And I think any player will tell you there's a huge appeal in that system. It's possibly trying to, I think maybe the provincials could possibly be removed from, I don't know what way you build them into it, because I think, you know, some form of a round robin group stage where there's a lot of matches. I'm a big fan of, I'd love to see the Friday night matches coming in under lights. I think that's a huge thing. Have a couple of matches spread out over a weekend, maybe two and three on a Saturday, two more on a Sunday. Just something like that, because there's a huge appeal. There's a lot of people want to see matches now. There's definitely an appetite for that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's possibly trying to join up the likes of the round robin with your knockout championship. I think The provincial thing, yeah, definitely a monster that has hurt the teams that have gone on to win it. So I don't know what way you work on that. But I think what you ultimately want to see is that everybody gets the same crack at it, because we've seen in the past that sometimes playing week on week or every second week, it gets you really sharp for a match. And then if you have a 4 or 5 week break, it can often come back to bite you. So putting it maybe the same for everybody in that, look, they're all starting over the one weekend, but going again in 2 weeks' time, or going again in 2 weeks' time. And how that system, you know, how we find that, I'm not 100% sure, because definitely the provincial championships are kind of in the middle of that, because we have a good round robin. I think that worked really well. And then it's trying to, last year's championship, which was a knockout championship every second week, was brilliant as well. So it's trying to join the two of them up and have it that maybe, and that probably leads into having a nice defined pre-season of maybe 6-7 weeks. That's it. That's your lift into championship then.
I get you. I get you. A couple of other issues, obviously, gents. They're trying to get rid of the Mayor Fornia again. Greg Kennedy has a lot to answer for. Niall Corcoran didn't seem to do much, didn't seem to hurt anybody during his time with you, Eddie. And obviously, Shane was the Mayor Fornia. I'm correct. Right in saying that, Shane, with the minors as well. What are your thoughts on it, gents? Like, obviously, it has been abused, particularly in football, and maybe not so aside from Greg's case in hurling, but it looks like it is going to be disbanded now because it only missed out on by 1% last year. And, they fully believe it's going to pass this annual Congress next week.
That there will be no more Mayor Fornia, they're going to nail it, is it?
No more Mayor Fornia, no more running selector, no.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose there's pros and cons to it. Look, we know some teams like to get an instruction in. I suppose then you look at that rugby where they don't go near the pitch at all. It probably puts a huge emphasis on how well your team is coached then and how well you can get the messages into them, because I think we've seen other teams use, part of the management and coaching team as a water boy. I think you're seeing teams being clever, but it's like that too. You need to get messages into players sometimes, because you can't, if a player is getting nailed or whatever way it is, like you do need to make changes. So I think finding some kind of a device that allows for that. But I think what we're seeing is that, look, there's definitely a lot of teams, and look, Greg has been pinged probably once or twice with it, but there's a lot more than him, to be fair to him, that are definitely taking advantage. And we've seen it there where, they're filling space on the team and on the pitch, and it's someone wearing a colour, or whatever. So, look, these are all the tricks of the trade, and ultimately you just want to see the players go out there and do it. And I suppose maybe that is the art of coaching, is that we coach them in the training pitch and then let them off on the hurling pitch. But again, I suppose I'm torn, because you do need to get messages out there every so often. But I would say that my first year with Laois, I saw even the physio and the doctor that kind of being abused. Like, for every time there was a lad down, there was lads flying in, they were trying to influence referees. And I just think some of that stuff, it's unnecessary. Yeah, we have a duty of care to players when they get injured. Absolutely, that's their sole focus, and the referee should be the one to give the nod for someone to come on the pitch. But we're at a stage where we're seeing all sorts of tactical things being used, and they're clever devices.
Shane, you didn't abuse it, it's certainly not from the games. How you doing?
I'm trying to learn all the time at the moment in the coaching world, to get away from being a player. But I had a few friendly words with a good few fourth officials now in a few matches, but. There was a lot of things I learned. I suppose I felt a few times I was going in, did I really need to be going in? I didn't. And I suppose I went in less and less and less as the time went on. But I'm all for the Mayor Fornia as well, because, like, I think no matter how well you are prepared, there is going to be a moment, or there is going to be a player, and he might be the best hurler in the world, but he just might see something going on that you can see, like, because he's so caught up emotionally in the game or in that moment, like, and you just have to say, look, we need you to just sit there, don't follow him, or, it's sharp hook out, just let him have the ball, you're going in all the time. And I think sometimes a message like that does have to go in. I think, if they, no more so maybe than the team is training that shouldn't be training, John, I think if they made a point of, suspending someone, which seems to be one of the motions coming in, that if you interfere with the game play, if they're puck out coming or a goalie can't hit that space because Mayor Fornia is there, and I think it's going to be that you get suspended for 2 matches. I think if you've seen a Mayor Fornia, a well-known Mayor Fornia, or maybe a lesser-known Mayor Fornia from, a big game, and you realise, okay, he went in, this is why he did, you're getting suspended for 2 games, you can't come onto the pitch to watch the match from the stand. So I think that's what that's going to do, John, is you're going to see that, look, player, people know you can't get away with it. And I think if it's squashed like that, and there's a big point made by maybe a big profile Mayor Fornia, I think a lot of this goes back to the football final a couple of years ago, Dublin and Kerry, John, if I'm mistaken, where the Mayor Fornia, I think, were counted coming in, was it 63 times or something during the matches. So I think that's, if you have to go in 63 times or something seriously wrong. But I'm all for the Mayor Fornia. I think they do have an important job, but I think if it is abused, or, you know, you see there's a bit of mouth going on between players and Air Force. I think that's where, you know, you can't have that.
Yeah.
That's not on. And just make make one big example, and you'd see it's a kind of a domino effect that maybe other Mayor Forn is down the road. Look, can't do this as a management team. Yeah. Just
absolutely. And I think there's a recognition there as well, Shane, that, you know, Tommy Dunn obviously had a run-in with Saoirse Bulfin. Well, not a run-in. They had a couple of rows on the sideline, if you remember, and then talking to the umpires during the semi-final there 2 years ago. But, you know, it's not, obviously, it is helping happening a lot in hurling, but hopefully there is some middle ground on it. Shane, just a couple more questions. Can I just ask you about the yellow slitter? It doesn't seem to have upset the game in any shape or form. I know there was a lot of opposition to it. I think the players were more disappointed with how it was sprung on them, even though, you know, it was in the pipeline for a long time. And listen, it's the standard color now. We're going to have to not get used to it. It's basically just going to be the Schlitter from now on. How did you feel it felt to work? And I know both of you are talking about Friday night and Saturday night games. Certainly under lights, I would imagine the yellow Schlitter will be more beneficial going forward.
Yeah, look, I don't know that it affect the game too much, really. Like, I mean, sure. I actually found with a couple of the games, maybe it was just me, though, that the yellow slitter was kind of getting lost, maybe in flight a bit more. Maybe that's because we're so used to watching the white slitter, I suppose, for years and years. And I suppose, look, they changed it in tennis, and we don't know anything else, only the yellow tennis ball now. But I suppose the reason they changed the tennis, like the speed that someone had served the ball could be 190 kilometers an hour, whereas I suppose, like, TJ was clocked taking a shot there in one match, and it was around the 130 or 140 mark, and
170.
Was it 170? Like, it didn't look like anyone could hit a ball faster than that. We'd no bother seeing the white ball. Well, I don't know, had we? I think you got a goal over for that. Like, I think we'll just get used to it. I just think sometimes, John, the only things people like to see change is a child's nappy. So maybe we just don't like change. Like, and I don't think it'll make much difference. Look, it's here now. They're going to go with it. I'd be interested to see, are they going to bring it into the clubs, John? That's what I'd be interested to see.
Seems to be the plan, Shane. Yeah. That seems to be the plan.
Yeah, no, I on that as well, John, I concur. I think we'll just, like anything you get on, I thought maybe for a complete definition of complete, I thought the orange colour. Now, I know we'll have a lot of traditions going on here, but it was, for me, because I find sometimes the yellow or the white just to get lost in the lights. I found in Turles once or twice, if it went up into the lights, you could lose it for a second. But I think it's something that we'll just bed down, we'll get on with it. But I think the point you're making is the manner in which it was brought in probably took a lot of us. Yeah, there was a lot of talk about it, and the No Joe Canning kind of voiced his concern to it, and maybe one or two others. And you just say, you know, every so often we see that we're told that these things have to go through Congress and there's a protocol in place. And then suddenly, it's like the penalty a few years ago. Stephen O'Keefe made a beeline towards Anthony Nash, and they met around the edge of the 14. And a week later, the penalty was changed. So look, I think it's probably the manner in which it seemed to just get parachuted in the midst of COVID. But we move on. I think it's something that we won't. I don't think I would be, I suppose, losing my marbles over either. I think the only issue is, I think there's talks of possibly this microchip in it at some stage or whatever. I think what you have to be very mindful of here is that one maker doesn't get carte blanche on the entire market. There's a lot of people dependent on hurling balls and stuff like that, and young lads. It's a huge market there. There's a massive, massive market, a massive amount of hurling balls sold every year. So I think as long as it's available to everybody or whatever way they do that, but I think you have to be very conscious that they're suddenly not taking a lot of lads out of business. It might seem like a small point, but I think it's an important point.
No, it's a very fair point. Absolutely, because a lot of people are trying to make a few quid out of it. Absolutely. Final question, gents. Like, it always seems to me that the game of hurling, you know, the rules are, and you mentioned the Stephen O'Keefe, Anthony Nash penalty or strike, Eddie, and that, you know, rules are trying to catch up to hurling all the time because it's evolving at such speed. If there is one rule that you believe would improve the game of hurling, if there is one at all, what one would it be, Eddie? I'll ask you first.
Oh, Jesus, you have to catch me there, definitely, John. I'm not so sure. I suppose the one that continues, and I remember distinctly around 2008 that we got usually, I think the intercounty managers, from what I gather, get briefed with something that the referees or the referees committee are looking at, saying, look, be it the head tackle, be it. But around 2008, we got a specific instruction off Brian. I remember he telling us at the start of the year, guys, you're going to have to watch the hand pass because the refs are being told to clamp down on this. And I think it's one that has continued. And yes, you touched on it there. It is very hard to please because such is the speed. And I know myself, I definitely had a few over the years and there might have been only a centimetre of a break from my hand when I let it off. But it is something that's probably coming to epidemic proportions now. I think we're seeing a lot of people giving out about it. But it's a very tricky one to interpret. I think, I know Don Logue called for it to be allowed and I would be dead against that. I think he was saying the speed at which it's played and the speed at which we're looking at our players, are we discouraging, speed of hands and all that? But I definitely think that it's something that probably will have to be looked at a little bit, but it's a tricky one. You know, it's very hard to define it because, like you said there, the speed of the game. Overall, I don't think it's too bad. I'd have to say, I think the state of hurling is not bad at the moment at all. I think you just don't want to see the likes of that cynical one that did come to the fore a little bit. You don't want to see that getting any worse than it is. But I wouldn't be changing a huge amount at the moment. I would like to see, I suppose, the refs getting a little bit more support. I do think that there's a scope there to help them a little bit more because, the speed of the game, it's very hard to keep up with everything.
Absolutely. Shane, yourself?
I agree with Eddie. I don't think hurling is in a fierce bad place. Like, I think hurling's in a good place. I think the speed at which the game has been played is a credit to the training that's going on. Does it have anything to do with the hurlies? It probably does. Lads are putting more time into their hurlies now and there's a bigger boss than most hurlies. So look, I think hurling's in a good place. One thing would I like to see maybe brought in, it's kind of, it's like Marmite, you either like it or you hate it. I would like to see from outside the 45 line, if you score a sideline, that you get 2 points for it. And it's like, right? And everyone goes, ash for sidelines, you're no one against you and all this. Canning is the top of all time. He's in the 20s. He's 20-something scored. And then the next one was a guy from Clare. His name escapes me. I think he was from the Clanlara club, I think. Does he have maybe 9 or 10? And then you're talking about even likes of Mark Coleman, Noel McGrath, Austin Gleeson, like these guys don't even have 10 scored. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I even scored 2, like, right? And I'm probably in the top 20 of all time because I scored 2. What I'm saying is because it doesn't happen every match. Canning's just unreal. He's the greatest of all time, right? At him. I think it'd be exciting to see. You got a side on a side of 45 because not every team has a Joe Kenny. And if you scored one outside the 45, be interested to see if there was a pint in it. Would you go for it? And I just think maybe that might be something. Not a hope it could come in, but sure, anyway, here we are.
I think just to come in, just the weight of the ball is probably something that a lot of people are talking about too, John. I think the ball is definitely travelling an almighty distance, and I know our players are massively conditioned nowadays, but you'd say something like, realistically, we shouldn't have that. It's now a norm for a ball to be sailing over the bar from 90, 100 yards out. Like, I think it's something that, look, maybe it's not, look, we're splitting hairs, but it's just something that I do and a lot of people are talking about too.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thanks very much for your time. It's great. The game of hurling might be changed by Congress Saturday week, but at least let's hope that we have a game to look forward to soon. Things are moving in the right direction. And thank you very much for your time, gents.
All right, Jack.
Sounds a pound.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.